Welcome back to another episode of Not Your Father Stocks. Tyler and I are going to do a nice wine and stock talk tonight. I have a nice Moscato. Tyler, what's in your cup or your glass?
I have a nice Merlot from Napa Valley.
I don't know where the I got this at like a local winery. I forget where we were. I think I was actually across the state somewhere near Erie. But anyway, cool. It's good. It's tasteful. Let's talk some stocks. Yes. I guess I have a couple. I'm actually really happy with all the positions that I have right now. Really happy. Any Augury Pro subscribers listening, we'll be doing a portfolio breakdown this Sunday where I'll hit them all and pitch them all, and anybody can ask me any questions. But we'll just briefly touch on some names tonight. But start with SMSI because I feel like everybody, especially the followers of the account, all know SMSI. There's not a ton to update on. The one cool thing that came out today was that they're launching their tracker. T-Mobile came out with it as like what's the Apple AirTrack or what are they called? You know what I'm talking about? They just announced them.
I the Apple one.
Yeah, there it's a tracker.
Yeah, I think it might be I don't know. I know
it's like AirTrack or something, but the one thing about them is that they're Bluetooth, so like you can only track stuff like within Bluetooth, or if another iPhone is near it, that iPhone will pick it up that has Bluetooth on, so you'll be able to see the location, which is nice. But again, there's still more Androids than iPhones in the world. I think it's like 60-40 or something like that. So it's a nice feature, and people will definitely buy them because it's Apple. Apple is a strong brand, but I don't think it's really a damage to what T-Mobile is going to be offering with their tracker, which I believe to be with SMSI, even though it's through their sync up app, because it's through Coolpad, and SMSI does all their trackers with Coolpad. But Coolpad has previously worked with T-Mobile on their own, but it just seems likely that this is with T-Mobile because Drive is included in this. Sync up app has a thing to do with Drive. Smith Micro has SafePath Drive, but theirs actually runs off the cellular network, so you can find theirs anywhere. So like you could lose your purse could get stolen on the subway in New York City, and it could be 30 miles from you, and you could still track it even if there's no iPhone near, which is nice. And they actually have it priced up higher than the AirTracks. I'm probably going to get off this and see it's not called AirTracks and feel like an idiot. But
I actually think that you brought up some interesting points that I kind of wanted to touch on too, in part talking about Augury, and then also in part talking about kind of what I see in my other businesses. One of the main things that you kind of touched on was, you're not really sure where T-Mobile fits in compared to Apple, right? Apple is going, any market that Apple enters into, they're basically, automatically a player. And it's almost like Amazon, Apple, Facebook, these guys can become main players of any industry very quickly. But one of the things that I listened to Discovery's earnings this morning and or their conference call. And one, I look at Discovery and I think that there's a strong brand, and it's pretty amazing how they've been able to pivot their entire business so quickly with just offering this Discovery Go app. And it kind of goes to show you how much market share is available, right? It's like, most people have Netflix and, Amazon Prime, but 15 million people have Discovery Go. Like that's significant. And, that there's going to be people, there's market share all around the world for them to capture. And one of the things that I posted on the Augury page the other day was, do you subscribe to an investing newsletter? And Motley Fool is one of it's maybe even the most popular investing newsletter. And one, I do not think that newsletter is really valuable at all. They like literally send the scammiest emails, and I've read some of their stuff and it's just like so out there. They literally use a lot of psychological, tricks to get people to stay signed up or to subscribe. And it's just not of that much value when I look at the businesses that they talk about. But, thinking about Augury, it's like, we're able to grab a small amount of market share, right? Even though it's very, very small, there's still people out there that are, you know, almost outliers that we can, any business can kind of touch into. And that is, in sense, market share. And the lower players of that market share, I think, you know, are, could, of every industry, are always at risk of, you know, getting moved out because of innovation of smaller businesses. And when you run a close-knit, a really small business, you're able to build really strong bonds between your customers. And I think that's kind of what Discovery has run into, where those people that watch these brands that they own are, you know, very loyal customers. So loyal that as soon as Discovery offered that new app, they all hopped on there, which was really, really interesting to me.
Yeah, you like, as it relates back to SMSI and market share, I was actually just listening to a podcast that was talking about this in tech, a little differentiated, but it's pretty well documented that IoT devices or the IoT market is, it's been exploding and it's continuing to explode. And as SMSI only needs one, they only need to get 1% of that market share. Not even, probably not even honestly 1% of that market share for us to have a massive winner on our hands. But that's enough about SMSI, because there's not enough, there's nothing new. That's it. I'll hit on one position that I think it's not a crazy informational advantage. It just doesn't seem that many people seem to know about it yet. Tyler, I don't know if you still follow Srax or not, or Srax, yep, however you pronounce, yep, it, but
they've been liking all my posts on Instagram.
their CEO was on Benzinga, I think, if that's how you say, yep, Benzinga. And it was like a 1 hour thing. He was on like minute 55. Not that many people knew about it. I got a notification about it from Weeble. But then scrolling through Twitter, scrolling through stock tweets, talking to other people I know who own or follow the company, they didn't know about it. He was on there and said that the quarter two has been off to an exceptional start, and he expects to well outpace the high end of their updated guidance that they just updated last quarter. And when he said that, the stock was at like $495, and then it dropped to like four, a little bit sub four there.
Four.
And I, yeah, and I started picking up shares at four, and I only have a 4% position. I'm short a lot of $5 puts at May's $5 puts that give me a 415 break even. And then I think their October or November $5 puts that give me a 315 break even that were going just ridiculous premiums. But nobody seems to know. I'm on stock twits, talking to people, telling people. Nobody caught on to that. And I think that's just a little informational advantage that we have there. And he also talked about in that clip about beginning, they haven't started yet, but thinking about beginning to sell to hedge funds. And it seems brilliant. I don't know why they wouldn't sell it. Nothing that they're doing is illegal. Yes, it's all this data and stuff, but every individual company can already have this data if they want to purchase the data the way that he explained it. They just put together a marketplace for this data for each individual company. And what it looks like is they're advertising, although they are paid in stock, but the stock doesn't come through and show on the revenue. It comes and shows through marketable securities on the balance sheet. And then through the income statement, it shows when they sell off those securities. Their advertising seems to be popping off too, because I try to put myself into Srax's algorithm so I can see the ads that are coming out. And I've seen like 12 to 15 different companies in the past month that were using their advertising services on Instagram stories there.
Start, that's a big win. Screenshots of those.
I have them all. Oh. I put them in our Srax tab in the Discord. But the other thing is they spun off that big token.
I saw that.
I don't know if necessarily a crypto company, but more blockchain. And their website's pretty nice. It's really smooth. Srax's website's smooth as well. Super nice.
Yeah, very,
but that,
nice.
That is like an OTC ticker worth like $2 billion. It's obviously extremely overvalued, but it only trades like 500,000 shares a day. So they're just working their way to under 50% ownership so they can stop consolidating their financial statements there. And last, they were at 64%. And in that interview on Benzinga, he said they're hoping to try and be under 50% by end of 2021, which I think is going to be difficult to do unless they get diluted below that, which is a possibility. But that's just like a free ATM for them. And all these stocks that they're collecting that are just being collected as marketable securities, it's just kind of an ATM for them as they can sell, because they can only slowly sell, or else they're just going to destroy all these low volume OTC stocks. I mean, I would like to see them get paid in dollars, but obviously if you look, it reflects in their financial statements, it doesn't cost them much money at all to offer the services that they do.
Well, if the market's going to rip.
Yeah, they might as well.
It's going to go up. No one wants cash. Get paid in stock, I guess. just know what you own. But
kind of a microcap ETF in a way.
Yeah, that's interesting. I did not know that. I actually talked with those guys too for a bit. Yeah, how do we get paid in stock? We should start getting paid in stock for how much we talk about SMSI.
Yeah, I saw some OTC company was pre-revenue company paid them in $2 million of stock, and it has like 25 million average daily volume, so they can just sell out. They can still make like $10,000-$20,000 a day every single trading day, selling like 1% of the daily volume on each company could be like $10,000 a day. So at the end of the year, we could see like 3 million in basically straight cash flow from selling out of these the marketable securities, because last quarter it was like 30 million on the balance sheet. And I'm guessing when we get maybe not Q1s but Q2's numbers, you're going to see like 40, 50 million in marketable securities. Wouldn't be surprised.
So there is some, I guess, underlying risk there as well.
Yeah, if they can't turn that to cash, and their OTC companies, which obviously have their own
should be risk. Able to do like more than 1% a day, to be honest. If you really wanted to turn it to cash, you could probably do a little bit more than that. General rule of thumb, this is actually another good talking point, because as I send out a lot of these journals, I have people messaging me, you know, they're actually filling these out. Especially the net strategy, because that really is like the easiest investing strategy. It's like a great place for a beginner investor to start. So when they message me, I say, you know, start with the net, go through it, value you the business, and, you know, fill out that sheet. And then what I've noticed is a lot of these people are, you know, finding dirt cheap stocks, but they're China. And you know, I wrote a Seeking Alpha article that actually was, you know, I guess my best article, because it got voted, you know, like article, it was runner up like article of the month on Seeking Alpha, which has like 400,000 readers at the time. But when you buy a company, you know, in China, that cash position, this article did so well is because basically the cash position inside this Chinese business was basically bullshit. There was no way to figure out how that cash got there, because it didn't show up in the IPO. They didn't sell, you know, product, like they just kind of appeared there. And, you know, that was, you know, basically what the article was about. And when you do look at, like, let's say you do want to invest in a China, you know, net. Well, you want to make sure that cash is seizable, you know, either in America, the UK, somewhere respectable, you know, outside of China, because fact of the matter is, if it comes down to, you know, a lawsuit between shareholders and, you know, the company, getting something done over in China is, you know, I would imagine unlikely. Getting those, seizing those assets, if the company has bank accounts in America, is going to be a lot easier, and you have a lot better chance of getting that cash out of the business. So it kind of goes back to the old Ben Graham lesson called the frozen company. And it's like, I don't know, how much is the business worth if it does all of this stuff, but you never get, you know, the company never gives you the money, right, that you deserve. And you know, they don't never pay back a dividend. They never do a buyback. You know, they never will give you that cash that you deserve, that you own. And that company is, you know, in fact, not worth any investment, because it's, you're never going to get that money. And that's kind of what these Chinese net are. And they can suck in investors and end up diluting them and just selling shares forever and not ever paying out the owners. And that's just not what you want to, the whole game is about getting money into your pocket. And I know a lot of investing now is about kind of realizing price movements, but you know, when cash is not flowing into the market, you're going to want these companies to buy back shares when they're supposed to, pay dividends when they're supposed to, and, you know, make sure that they're taking care of the shareholder.
Just easier to own a company that produces cash, huh? Is what you're saying.
Yeah, and like is going to give you that cash. Like yeah. SMSI, if SMSI was trading at, you know, dirt cheap levels, there's very little doubt in my mind that those guys, you know, they would be savvy enough to, you know, buy back shares. Yeah. You know, some of my other investments like ARC, you know, that is a company that does buy back shares and it does have a dividend history and, you know, they are paying dividends, right? So that money is showing up in my account. That's super important because a lot of people are going to be, you know, kind of sideswiped. When the market doesn't go up anymore, you know, but just imagine 2 years of maybe like minus 15% on the SPY. And, you know, that's going to be pretty painful for people that are used to the market only going up. And it's kind of like what we were talking about before the show. I told Andy that I went on to a radio show and I had like three people call me after I got off the show, which I was shocked, right? Because I don't really listen to radio. He's, you know, said, you don't listen to radio. And I had three people call me. I've never had anyone call me and said, hey, listen to the podcast, you know, whatever. So it was really eye-opening. And, you know, I was talking to my buddy who works at a startup payment company. And, you know, we, our age, our peer group and our ages, you know, we've grown up with this thing called the internet. But, you know, kind of a little bit earlier than us, like these people literally didn't live the same style of life. They used radio, they used cable TV, they, you know, read the newspaper. And it's like those industries have literally gotten flipped upside down by this internet thing. Very slow to change. And that was one of the things that I kind of like about Discovery is that I posted some larger macroeconomics on that article I wrote on Discovery. It's, you know, there's still like 50% of people don't even have a streaming service yet. And it's like, dude, where have you been? I've been on these things. I don't even know how long I've been on Netflix.
First off, they're missing out. Like, you're not watching like anything good if you're not on a streaming service. Like I have a hate for radio and TV because it's just like so bland and so dull and not realistic. Like the TV shows, there's no nudity, there's no swearing, it's just not real life at all. Then radio, it's everything's bleeped out. It's the same songs over and over again. You can't find anything like original and new. It's just the same stuff. And that the people that are listening to them are kind of living that same life. Like if they were a Discovery subscriber, they're a Discovery subscriber for life. Like they're there.
Yeah, no, they are there.
That's the road they ride.
But I would say, you know, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, like these businesses make big dollar amounts. Like that's the thing that I also kind of think some people underestimate. Like there's no doubt that podcasts are the future. But these radio businesses still put up dollars. Like they still have dollar volume. And that's pretty important. Now they also have tons of debt and, you know, they never saw the internet coming. So their businesses are completely out of position, but you know, it's kind of like the dairy thing. Like people, the dairy dollar volume is pretty, pretty substantial. It is, you know, soy milk and all these other things, almond milk, are these things probably going to be, you know, are these more economical and likely the future? I think so, but I also don't think that you're changing, you know, like I don't think cheese on top of pizza is going anywhere. Like that is just like a staple that's going to be hard to rewrite. Now I could be way wrong, but the dollar volume matters. And I think there's going to be industries where people think that the industry is ready to change and it's just simply not. You know, that's the major risk with EV, right? It's like, okay, everyone is saying, yes, this is the future and that we are going to have, you know, electric vehicles and everything. But like, there's so many gas powered cars that are still selling. Like, it might take a lot longer.
An enthusiast.
Yeah, it's going to take, it might take a lot longer than people are maybe
it's called
projecting
inertia.
In the stock prices and the business valuations.
It's inertia, right?
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's very interesting. That's what makes investing so fun. It's like, you might be, this is the thing. It's like, you might be dead wrong on what you're thinking, but you're in investing, you're allowed to be wrong. You won't, you're never going to hit every bet. You're not ever going to, you know, be perfect. And there's going to be businesses where you think, oh, this is definitely going to hit. And it just simply doesn't hit. And you missed it. You were wrong. I, you know, like all of these people on Amazon back in the early 2000s, right? These guys were just dead wrong. And
you can be wrong and still win too.
Yeah.
I think
you can be right and lose.
Maybe you can manage your risk. Like APT isn't over, but I think I was like almost dead wrong on APT and APT management, but still won.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not over. I mean, that's the thing is like, you never know when you're actually wrong. It takes a while to know when you're actually wrong, but
it's kind of one of those things where it's like, you don't realize that you're, you know, building muscle because it happens over time, right? You don't realize you're wrong because it takes a while to play out and you kind of get used to, you get, you know, very used to what's going on maybe in the present. Versus, and that's why I try to give myself, when I make an investment, I try to give myself, okay, you know, this trade's under this, or if it, you know, nothing happens by 4 years, right? That keeps me, you know, somewhat honest to myself where I can't say, you know, 4 years later, it's like, oh, I still think this is going to work. And it's like, dude, you know, mm-hmm. Go to something else already. You wasted time here and time is expensive, but yeah. And it's like, you know, things do take a while to play out. Everyone wants their stuff to go up tomorrow. And generally speaking, you know, you got to give things at least a couple of quarters, in my opinion,
it's human run business. And people leave jobs that make things go. There's so many little things. Like when you're trying to get a decision to go through a board and someone leaves the board and now you have a new board member, little things like that.
And I'm reading Snowball. I actually read it a long time ago, but I saw someone tweet about it and then I had it on my shelf and I pick it up and I start reading. And he literally talks about going to the racetrack and he's just like, if you watch people, he's like, you know, they're so silly. They literally bet on the color of that the shirt that the jockey's wearing. They bet on the horses' names. They literally don't use any logic or any, you know, substantial information to make decisions. So it's like, does the color that the jockey wear affect the speed of the horse? Not at all, right? And if you're weighing that heavily in your decision making, well, that's a very silly thing to weigh heavily. And you know, it's no surprise when that person ends up being wrong and wrong and wrong and wrong. Now, if you're weighing what is, you know, the right things, like maybe the horse's times over the last four races, you're probably going to be a lot closer in your estimation. And you're probably weighing more of the right factors. So kind of that is important when people are going through the Augury Journal. You know, they're doing a good job, like they're doing all the right information. But the fact that it's China and there's no seizable assets, that's something that I weigh personally really heavy. And that's not on the list. So maybe that's my bad. But, you know, you can find a Chinese company that is honest and that has seizable assets in America, UK. Like there was one that I was invested in and they own tons of real estate in the US and UK. So I felt more comfortable making that investment. But it's so important.
It's almost just easier to not go there.
Especially, yeah, if you're a beginner and you're not doing that in-depth research that you kind of should be, and you should really, you got to know what you own. And that doesn't just stop after, you know, the checklist. Like you should constantly be watching those managers and, you know, it's business. You're owning a business and, you know, business is not as kosher as people think. Like you look at some of these companies that are OTC and you go back and you read what they did. And it's just like, people lie, cheat, and steal in this game. And, you know,
the stock is the business. I saw a thing, a guy's tweet the other day, and he was like, it took me forever, my first couple of years, wondering like why a company would go public that doesn't generate cash, that was like a microcap OTC or whatever. And he's like, it took me a while, but then I realized that the stock is the business.
Yeah,
that's the business. Like, that's how they're just going to make, they're going to just keep making money, because
basically idiots. So I actually have a, I actually covered it up yesterday, but I have a, that was like one of my main strategies, is finding these stocks that the business is selling stock. I covered it with a Ben Graham and the liquidation value sheet, but, I had this criteria that, you know, works great. It's a very good, it's a great criteria if you're trying to, you know, figure out what, if this business is a business and they're trying to sell product, or if they're trying to sell stock to stay alive and make money. But I used to use it all the time. And I could probably run off, you know, 15 names that like that, that literally the business is just to, you know, sell stock. And, you know, the game that these guys play, I know it really well, right? Like, I guess I won't mention the names because I don't want to get in trouble, but, you know, they all do the same bullshit, right? Change the ticker, you know, tell investors that they're entering a new industry. And it's just like so silly. Or like, oh, there's a new product coming. And this is, in fact, you know, Tesla kind of does this with Elon Musk. It's like, the game is just to keep investors excited about the stock, even though there's no
storytelling.
There's no profits coming to the business. And that's what, you know, and that's really the thing. If you read Tesla's earnings, like, they literally made money on Bitcoin and EV credits. Like, the underlying business of selling cars is not working great. And it's so interesting. So they cut out all the Model S, right? That's like the highest gross margin product that they had. They don't make, they're in zero in production last quarter. So they're basically betting on getting as many cars on the road, printing the smaller Model 3s, and then saying, well, the more cars we get onto the road, we will have superior AI and our autonomous fleet is going to dominate. That's what I look at the numbers, and the only thing I can understand is like, that's what I think Musk is betting on, is he's betting huge on winning the autonomous fleet thing. And I think what he's trying to do is, but everyone says that the Tesla hardware is not good enough to basically plug into the AI and, you know, get, you know, have the machine learn. But that's not what Tesla's saying. Tesla's saying that our, you know, our AI is collecting all this data and it's going to be the best because they're collecting it at, I think what I want to say is a much faster rate than everyone else. Like, they have a lot of cars on the road where Waymo doesn't have these cars on the road. But Waymo's using, I guess, LiDAR and these other technology, the laser technologies or whatever. But it's going to be so interesting. And it's like, okay, Musk likes to bet big, right? That's how he's so rich. And if he misses this bet, you know, and not everybody wins every bet, right? He can win 8 bets, and then that 9th bet is the one that kills him. And you know, if you hit 8 bets in a row, big bets, you know, then you're going to make a ton of money. But how much do you lose on when you lose? And that's why investing, it's a risk to reward game. And it's like, you know, he's hit, you know, the credit card company. Then it was like X or something. And then it was like PayPal. But, you know, he hit all these things, and he's hit SpaceX, and he's hit Boring, and he's hit Tesla, and he, you know, had a piece of the solar city thing, and, you know, he hit everything so far. But like, this bet on AI autonomy is huge, and the market cap is huge on Tesla. And if he's wrong, it's like, holy
yeah. Well, the market cap probably isn't likely to stay where it's at, but Qualitatively around me, since we're so rural, we don't like, there's not a lot of Teslas around me, because I mean, out here you're going to hit a deer or something, and then you're going to be really messed up if you have a Tesla and you hit a deer.
There's no engine in the front.
Yeah, well, just there's no Tesla shop like around us to work. So like not many people have Teslas around here. But like, so when I was in Atlantic City for a bachelor party, which is in New Jersey, and since there are ones around here, they see them a little more often now, but like when we're there, everyone's like, "Oh, there's a Tesla. Oh, there's a Tesla," because we don't see them ever.
Really?
Yeah. So like it's still like a cool thing.
Interesting.
Like people, like, I mean, I'm like that. Like I would definitely drive. Like I don't, not regarding the company, Elon Musk, financials or anything, I would totally drive a Tesla. They seem, I've never even been in one. They seem super sick though.
Yeah, the Model S is I'm actually kind of upset they don't make it anymore, because that one is sick. But yeah, I would
totally drive one.
Yeah, no, I actually really want to drive one. I've been around them. I've been inside of them. I've never actually been the one driving the car, but I live in Delray Beach area, kind of, and Boca Raton is like the Tesla capital of the East Coast. So I see them all the time. Everyone sees them around here. And there's a Tesla dealership in the Boca Mall. And actually last time I was in there, Boca's like, you're talking about like super rich people, like they're pretty snobby and they're not necessarily a joy to be around. They're very high maintenance, let's call them. And I was in there and this lady was like, she was an older lady and she was like, "This is a cheap car. Like I would never buy one of these." And I'm like short Tesla. And I'm like, "Oh, we need some more of that." You know, yeah. I since covered and the stock has gone up like 200%, but all right, I'll be right back. But yeah, no.
I'll tell you guys a little bit, tell her to run quick. He'll be back in a minute, but tell you guys about a pick that I'm kind of excited about. Augury Pro subscribers are going to see. There's already a lot of research written on the company. There's a lot on YouTube and stuff, but the ticker symbol is VTSI. And shout out to the Augury Instagram follower who helped with this a little bit. But the company does police training, and they actually have simulators that let Tyler listen now. Tyler, I'm just talking a little bit about VTSI. I don't know how much you've read of anything that I put like in the chat on it and stuff. But some introduction. My stepdad is a police officer. He's actually used the Virtua product at a different police department that's like an hour away from us for a training, and absolutely loved it. Last night, I actually sent the product to someone who just became a state police officer in Pennsylvania, and he was astonished that he's used something like it, but not like a state-of-the-art equipment like Virtua. And his second message to me, he double messaged me and said, "I want to experience that." So what it is they have like, you can get different sizes of them, but it's like 360, almost 360 degree. It's like 300 degree, huge screens around you. And they have a super massive library of content that can stem from like multiples of different types of suicide, bridge jumping, someone with a gun to their head, an active shooter, a mental illness, someone who's autistic, someone who's deaf, and you sit in front of the screen and you're completely engulfed in it. And the reason that they don't do virtual reality is because you can actually use a gun in these simulators. Like you can actually hold like your real AR-15, your real Glock, and shoot it. Like they have one set up, so like they fire, but obviously no bullet comes out. Tasers work with it and stuff. In virtual reality, it's not as realistic as to where you aim and where the bullet hits in the simulator. But so the person's up in it, they have pain sensors on them, and then there's someone behind them controlling them. So as someone's going through this situation, so say there's someone suicidal and they're trying to talk them down, they're trying to de-escalate, because police officers, I've communicated with a lot of police officers about this, they don't have this training. And if you listen to the last Jocko Willink was on Joe Rogan's podcast, they went pretty in depth about this. Police officers don't get that much training at all. Basically, police officers are trained to take down bad guys. They don't really necessarily want to, and they're not trained to deal with mental health, autism, all these different things, but they're forced to because they're the first in line that they have to do this. They're not trained on it. So rather than defund the police, there's actually a push for more police training, where police officers are maybe going to be forced to do 2 hours of training per week. So then you have something like Virtua where they can go in and do this. Then back to the simulator here. So they have little sensors on them that can actually cause pain. And there's someone like at the computer behind them controlling it. So if they're having a conversation with the person and they think that their police officer that's in training responded like not correctly to the situation, they can change the way that situation plays out and have the person like jump off the bridge, et cetera, like whatever it is. Or the person can start shooting at them and they actually send pain sensors to make it as realistic as possible to them. Tyler, I'll just send you this Instagram clip of like this gun club or whatever who has a simulator for themselves and just like regular citizens to use. But they have like pain sensors on this guy's butt and stuff as he's like in an active shooter situation, and they send them off. So like you're actually so engulfed in it. There's just like not a more realistic training to it. And if you go on and Google police training, et cetera, Virtra and police, you can see the contracts that have been flowing in. They have like super strong tailwinds. The administration is for more police funding. There's actually, and the Biden administration actually released something for autism police training, which Virtra has already released that like a year ago. They have an autism police training library. They have a nationally accredited coursework, like testing to go through. They have a lot of different things that they offer, and they've been in business for 27 years with the same CEO. They've been growing almost every single quarter for the last like 17 quarters or something like that now. And this past quarter is really when the tailwinds have started to kick in. Backlog grew 52% year over year. Met with the CEO not too long ago, and he used the term overwhelmed by demand. So it's pretty exciting.
That's good.
Yeah. It's a good thing to have happen, especially after you just raised $18 million and we were all great subscribers were able to purchase when the market cap was 50% in cash on the balance sheet after that raise too, which is pretty nice. But overall, from the people I've talked to, my stepdad, I only have two or three people I've talked to, but best in class.
I have the numbers pulled up here. So 60% gross margin product. It's actually better, but let's just say 60% gross margin product. Revenues from 06, revenues in 2006 were 1.89 million. Revenues today or last year were 19 million. That's, you know, significant. That is a long time, but you know, that's exactly what you want to see.
Those are a lot of relationships built within that time period, we should say.
Yeah. And while, you know, we don't, so generally, right, you're trying to grow revenues, trying to grow. Now, right, you have basically right product, right place, right time, the way I kind of look at it. Balance sheet is healthy now that they just have raised $18 million. Also looking at the chart really quick, I don't know what happened, but the stock gapped up.
Yeah, it was great. There was 165 million shares traded in a day, and that's when they decided to do the raise. They released their earnings, and they did 20 cents in EPS blowout quarter with the backlog numbers. But it just it's a stock that'll catch traders with what it is, a riot stock or whatever. Like when George Floyd incident happened, the stock spiked.
Yep, that's what I was thinking. The one other stock that is always on like on that game is the DGLY, I think.
Yeah.
And I posted how shitty that company is. The company is so bad. Talk about a business that's like job is to sell stock, not the product. They've literally done nothing for shareholders.
Your story about them.
And it's just like, I just remember, it was like, I honestly want to say that might be the first stock I've ever bought or shorted. Like it was like one of the very first stocks that I ever traded. And I was like, I think I like lost money on it. And I was like, I was silly. Like what? I just totally bought a stock without knowing anything about the company. And then I went and I started researching it, and I'm like, I would have never bought this if I, you know, had done my research. And that's when I kind of got into, you know, really quickly just saying, look, you have to do your research. You want to make money, you literally need to do your research. You literally need to know the fundamentals of the business. You need to know the character of the business. And it's amazing how much that matters. You have a good management team, it can be, you know, the greatest gift in the world. If you have a terrible management team, you can have a great business and never get what you deserve. So the integrity of the business to me as an investor is really, really important. The character, you know, of the management team is important. And obviously the numbers are really important, right? We want to make money. You're not like, we don't.
Qualitative aspects aren't very important though.
Yeah, no, for sure. When you have run a concentrated portfolio, you know, you're going to probably place small bets that are relatively insignificant to your overall portfolio. But the goal is to bet big on these companies that do have the chance to, you know, be a 10 bagger or five bagger or something like that. Like a 5-to-1 bet with a large percentage of your portfolio is going to make a huge difference in your performance compared to, you know, making 20 little bets. And, you know, even if you have a five bagger on a very, really small position, you know, it's not that great compared to, you know, doing the work, understanding what you own and saying, yes, this is a very good idea, right? I did all my checklist. I did all my homework. You know, the time is right in the market. This has a really good chance of hitting, and it is mispriced. And this, you know, if I do hit this bet, you know, I make a massive amount of money compared to, you know, being diversified and just making, you know, a good bet, right? You can have a great opportunity and kind of, you know, if you have a fastball right down the middle on a 2-0 count with the bases juiced, you're not trying to slap a single down, you know, the third baseline. You're trying to hit a home run. Like, that is a great opportunity. You should be, you know, going for it. You cannot be scared, right? And that's like one of the things that I try to push onto a lot of my friends. You know, I want them to succeed. I want them to make money too. So I say, yeah, dude, like, you know, go home, do the research. And when, you know, if you think this makes sense and you think that this is a good idea, or you find a good idea and you have a great opportunity in life, take it. Like, you know, go all in, like really bet big. And that's how you get ahead. You don't get ahead by taking, you know, piker bets, as I call them. And, you know, that's just how it's been for me my entire life, is like, you don't get anywhere. You know, you might get a little bit, you know, you might go up a little bit, but you don't want to just go up a little bit in life. You want to, like, you know, own, like, I'm literally happy that I own ICCC, and I told people about it. And I, you know, I still think that this drug is going to hit. And, you know, if this drug does hit, you know, the business is going to go from, you know, it went from like $7 million and it's going to go to $30 million in revenue. And like, that's an asset that I own. And these guys have a 50% gross margin product. These drugs are worth, you know, they can be worth $100 million combined. And it doesn't surprise me when I see larger investors, you know, step in and buy up this move, because they also kind of understand the game. And that's important to me. Like, you want to be on the sidelines with the good shareholders as well, right? You don't want to be like holding a stock where, you know, people are trying to sell out of it, right? Because that's going to limit the price from going up. But if you have your largest shareholders, right? So Amusell's largest shareholders are the ones, they're the only ones that even got asked to participate in this last offering. So if they're betting at $8.25, do you think they want to sell at $9, $10? No. Like, they're betting for $16. They're literally making a bet to, you know, get $16 a share, let's say, or $16.50 if you double $8.25, which is what they paid. And those are exactly the people that you want to own the float, because that's going to allow the stock to go higher. Right. And that's like very, very important if you're buying a company that is not going to necessarily pay a dividend in the next couple of years, or, you know, buy back shares in the next couple of years. Like, these guys need that money, and it's cool. And I like that this move that, you know, they made, is because you have your top shareholders literally making almost like a personal deal with the CEO, saying, hey, look, here's the cash that you need. Get those production facilities to $30 million, like, make it happen. And now it's Brigham's job to basically get this stuff going and make sure that this is going to hit for these large investors. And these large investors literally own majority of the company. That's why the stock is so thin. And these are the, you know, these are the benefits of being a small time investor and only managing, you know, whatever money you have. Like, it's like, it's not millions and millions of dollars that we're talking about. And you can totally, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. Anybody in the world, if you had a portfolio of a couple million dollars, you could have easily bought $250,000 worth of Amusil since I've been on it at, you know, probably at an average price of under, let's say, I don't know, 580. So, I mean, like, don't get me wrong. If you're listening and you have a couple million dollars in your portfolio and you want to like hit these stocks, it's very possible. Don't get me wrong. You got to show up every day and buy 5,000 shares. But other than that, you know, you could have done that.
All right. What do you think? Should we wrap up? You think you had enough?
Sure. Let's wrap it up. I got some dinner I got to eat.
All right, boys and girls. Good talk. All great subscribers. See you Sunday at the breakdown. Have a good night. See you next time.
Peace.